Hi, everybody. I'm Bridget Bergen, in for Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. We're taking a big look at the state of our democracy. The past 6 years have been marked with hyper-partisan divides, political violence, false allegations of voter fraud, and stalled legislation. And this conversation extends beyond the Trump years because there has been a slow breakdown of our political institutions that facilitate and support our democracy. But it seems like since the 2020 election, we hit the gas pedal and went zooming down a cliff of democratic disarray.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us.
And what is now known as former President Trump's big lie led to
I call on this mob to pull back and allow the work of democracy to go forward.
We love you. You're very special. Go, 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 go.
Since the 2020 election and the January 6th Capitol insurrection, voting rights has become even more a major hot-button issue on both sides of the aisle.
Today, more than 50 Democratic members of the Texas House left Texas. Breaks our heart that we have to do it. But we do it because we are in a fight to save our democracy.
You know, for the right to vote and to have that vote counted is democracy's threshold liberty.
But still, federal voting rights legislation has failed to pass.
Voting rights legislation failing once again in the Senate. Every Republican senator voting against it, calling it a power grab, a federal takeover.
Given all the turbulence of the last few years, we wanted to give you a chance to weigh in on the state of democracy.
It is under siege. It is under assault. It is being battered by cynical campaigns of misinformation.
Collapsing. I am really disturbed.
And the state of our democracy looks fragile.
Currently at war with each other.
It's available to the highest bidder.
Failing, being overrun.
Democracy in the United States is on life support, while democratic leadership tries to play nice with the people who are trying to pull the plug.
Now, we didn't want to sound all doom and gloom, but really, what are we to expect this coming midterm election season? And looking even further ahead, what is the future of American democracy? For more on this, I spoke with Charles Homans, staff writer at the New York Times and New York Times Magazine, and Dr. Liliana Mason, an associate professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University and author of Uncivil Agreement, How Politics Became Our Identity. Charles recently hosted an expert panel for the New York Times Magazine on where American democracy goes from here, and I asked him what he took away from the panel and how worried we should be.
The crossroads that we're at now is a genuinely new place. And I think there's not a clear sense of how we necessarily get through the spot that we're in, where all sorts of longstanding ideological and racial and cultural, you know, conflicts that have been present in American history for many, many years have really become mapped onto partisan identity and partisan conflict in a way that has no real precedence in modern American history. And I think we don't really know what comes next. We're sort of figuring this out.
Was there anything that you were particularly surprised about in the conversation you had?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that everybody seemed to kind of, you know, share a certain view. It's difficult to see how we get through this. You know, there are sort of barriers to getting through it that we haven't really yet figured out how to get across.
And certainly, we didn't just arrive at this moment out of nowhere. Lily, can you talk a little bit about some of the moments or events that have brought us to where we are at this point?
Yeah, one of the things that's been happening sort of gradually over the last few decades is that we've seen this sort of gradual realignment of the parties around issues of culture, social status, gender and racial equality. This all kind of started after the civil rights legislation of the 1960s. And then after that period, white Southern Democrats were really disaffected and over a generation left the party and became Republicans. And so that process was basically finalized in the last 10 years or so, and especially with both the election and the campaign of Trump, the parties have been kind of moving targets over the last few years and divided over kind of what America looks like, who Americans are, and, you know, whether we've made enough progress towards equality or whether we've gone too far. Those tend to be the most contentious partisan arguments right now.
Do you get a sense at all, Lily, that the party leaders themselves take any responsibility for kind of the way their infrastructure has deteriorated to some degree?
I mean, it's hard to change infrastructure when you're part of it, right? The people who are in government rely on the government, you know, the infrastructure of government that got them in there. And so it's really hard to change the system from within it. But then on the other hand, it's impossible to change it from outside. So that's the sort of, you know, catch-22 that we're stuck in right now, where we need people on the inside to work to change it, but it's against their incentives to do so.
How much have the, you know, supposed culture wars contributed to the partisanship that we're seeing now?
The culture wars really are the kind of the central argument that is really riling people up. And part of the reason that we're seeing such a reliance on culture wars, particularly from the right, is that economic policies of the Republican Party have never been very popular. You know, the sort of conservative policies that, you know, are anti-government support and tend to not be very popular in the electorate as a whole, even among Republicans. And so it's really in the interest of the Republican Party to focus on, you know, sort of grievance politics, identity-based politics, to stoke, you know, really deep divisions in American society, like racial divisions, gender roles, all of these things that tend to be arguments that we're not very good at having and that, you know, that we tend to get really upset about. That's really become the center, because the policies, you know, that the two parties are arguing over aren't actually, that's not really what people are paying attention to right now.
Charles, I'm wondering, to what extent do you think the fight over our election infrastructure and the reliability of our elections is really just an accelerant to some of these problems we've been talking about?
I think it is, in the sense that it reflects a real profound lack of faith in that system that people really on both sides, you know, of the political argument in the United States have now. I mean, one thing that's really striking is just the degree to which faith in the actual fairness of elections has eroded, for obviously very opposite reasons, on the right and the left in the United States. And one way that you've seen that kind of manifest itself has been in these, you know, bills that have been proposed at the state level in a number of states by Republican legislators that would, you know, place one or another element of the election system under more direct partisan control. And very, very little of that legislation has actually passed, but it's been on the table. And you've also seen the Democrats really struggle to respond to it at the federal level, in part because a couple of Democrats in the Senate, you know, made the decision that this was not blowing up the filibuster over. But also Democrats have been really unwilling to kind of separate this out from the broader issue of voting rights and some of these sort of, you know, much bigger, more longstanding policy issues that have been out there.
Lily, in the panel, you said that it's, quote, going to get even uglier than it currently is, talking about the differences in identity politics. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's really a reflection on, you know, looking back in our history as a country, you know, sort of when we do have discussions about equality, racial and gender equality, particularly racial equality, you know, how have we behaved ourselves, right? How have we comported ourselves? And if you look back at the civil rights movement, you know, that was met with a lot of violence. Even just, you know, even going all the way back to the Civil War and Reconstruction, you know, that Reconstruction was effectively ended because of a huge wave of violence against newly formed Black communities. You know, we kind of go two steps forward, one step back in terms of making progress toward a more kind of egalitarian, multiracial democracy. And in my view, that's sort of where we are right now, is in another one of those steps where we're trying to make more progress. And it's just going to be met with backlash. There's never been a point in American history when progress towards equality has not been met with backlash. And so it's, in my mind, sort of an inevitable part of any process in which we make progress towards actually becoming a multiracial democracy.
Lily, this week has been so dominated by the confirmation hearings for Judge Jackson. I'm wondering to what extent the issues with partisanship that we've seen on full display in those hearings, I'm wondering whether you think this is yet another warning sign, or if you see any signs of hope in them?
I think that there's both, you know, hope and kind of disappointment, right? I mean, it's not surprising that we're seeing an extremely partisan approach to the questioning, but it's also pretty unsavory behavior towards the potential justice who, you know, has a stellar record. So it's not surprising, but it's sort of the way that we would expect partisans to behave these days, particularly coming from the Republican Party. I do think that the way that Judge Jackson has been questioned is certainly reflective of, you know, a different attitude towards her as a person. And we're seeing that, you know, coming from kind of unsupported attacks against her record. But, you know, this is sort of the place we're in right now. And this is kind of where, you know, President Trump got us to, is that we, you know, we're kind of saying the quiet parts out loud at this point when we're talking about racial equality. And that's, you know, in 20 years ago, it was sort of prohibited language in quote unquote respectable places. But increasingly, we're starting to see this kind of, you know, gendered and racial language really out in the open, even in the Congress.
On our final minute or so, what do you see in terms of the hope for the future of American democracy? Just for each of you, Lily, why don't you go first?
The most hopeful potential future is one in which we actually do really start to kind of live up to the things that we've enshrined in the Constitution, and specifically the 14th and 15th Amendments of the Constitution, where, you know, actual equal protection under the law, right? Equal voting rights for everyone, having, you know, less or preferably no institutionalized prejudice against any American. You know, these are very far off goals, but we have been making progress in that direction. And so the backlash that we're seeing is evidence of that. So I think that my most hopeful vision is that we actually get to a place where we're a more tolerant and representative democracy.
You know, this isn't the first time we've had very deep, abiding political arguments in this country. And as Lily says, I mean, a lot of this stuff has sort of, you know, built over time. And sometimes those dynamics change over time. And it, you know, maybe, I mean, I think some of these fights are fights that this country just probably needs to have and to get through one way or another. You know, other stuff may kind of fall by the wayside. You know, the political, like, landscape does change pretty quickly, you know, at times in this country. So I think it's, you know, probably the best hope for the future is this sort of the uncertainty about what's coming. You know, it could be bad or it could be not so bad.
Charles Homans is staff writer at the New York Times and the New York Times Magazine. And Dr. Liliana Mason is associate professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University and author of Uncivil Agreement, How Politics Became Our Identity. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In one sentence, the state of the U.S. democracy is we have to be vigilant because the old white men are not going to give up their power easily.
Currently, the state of U.S. democracy is gravely imperiled because we have the almost unthinkable situation in which one of our two major political parties continues to lie about the last election somehow being illegitimate.
The current state of democracy looks extremely endangered.
I think the state of our democracy right now is like an us versus them tug of war, with each team looking for that ringer that will come in and rip the rope right out of the hands of the other side.
The state of American democracy is in disarray. The state of the U.S. democracy looks to me like the beginning of the fall of the Roman Empire.
Call us at 877-869-8253. That's 877-8-MY-TAKE. Let us know what you're feeling or what you're looking for us to cover. It's The Takeaway.